Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest M.D. Kozkowski, who is the author of The Seers, a fascinating book with information about the unseen spiritual hierarchy that exists just outside of space-time. We'll be talking about that in a minute. Michael is the president of the Center for Alloplastic Facial Reconstruction in Little Rock, Arkansas. As a plastic surgeon, I've used prosthetics for face, hands, arms, whatever, throughout my career, and have always been just amazed by the artistic, things that go into these prosthetic reconstructions. They're just absolutely amazing, and it's a great field to be in. He's an artist and a medical inventor, and I guess we'll talk to him in a minute about how he got involved in theology, physics, philosophy, and ancient civilizations, and came up with the book The Seers, which is just fascinating. Thanks, Michael, for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Are you calling from Little Rock?
Yeah, outside Little Rock, absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, I guess the first thing we need to talk about is how you became aware of the spiritual dimension and, how you came to write the book.
Well, that's a long story. But, to answer the first part of it.
Okay.
I think that as a child, I think that we, as children, we all have access, or more or less confused, often with a lot of social structures of our world. We're more faceted with nature and the world around us, and we can tap into or the knowingness of the infinite intelligence that exists and that the universe emanates from. And so, certainly, from a child, I definitely would speak to God, prayer, just listening and that sort of thing. And then, so there was really never any question for me that there was a supreme, higher power that exists in the universe. And as I grew older and, of course we go through all different growths and setbacks and things. And many times I went through many different spiritual quests, setting all different various religions and spiritual disciplines, and so had a real certainly a real roller coaster over my lifetime, and from that gained deeper knowledge into what is the ultimate truths that all spiritual disciplines share, and certainly the seers is definitely, much of it is metaphor, and and the truth embedded within it as metaphor is, and certainly the seers is a way for me to communicate a lot of the things that the truths and experiences and power that exist in the unseen world, and the things to me, a lot of things that which really matter, a way to communicate that in a way that is not a textbook, in a way for people to be pulled from page to page. In fact, I originally wrote as a screenplay to try to get a larger audience, kind of bring people in that way. But anyway, I'm sure we can go back to that as we talk. I'll probably bring different aspects of the development of that in, depending on what aspects of the conversation, topics we're talking about. But that's kind of a quick overview to that question.
Well, thank you. I want to ask about the ancient order of seers. When did you discover this? It's and sort of where did you become aware of this ancient order?
Well, I originally wrote the book. It's been over 10 years now. I first wrote it as a screenplay, and I think a lot of this is based upon my two things. One's intuition, when one is tapped into just listening to the universe, quieting the mind, and hearing the whispers, and as well as just my studies of ancient history and religion, reading the scriptures from different cultures and so forth, and obviously the Bible I studied for many, many years, even the original languages, and went to grad school to study ancient history, the ancient civilizations, to really understand all the original ancient texts and the first that existed, on all the cuneiform tablets. Divination was the predominant document found in our archaeological sites. When they dig up and they find stone tablets, it's like practically 80% of them are always on divination. So that was just a real fascination into seeing when you read even the Bible and you talk in the Old Testament, when it talks about Abraham's communication with God and Moses and Noah and all that. I mean, there's this real, and of course the prophets, which is what the seers is talking about, that the seers are the prophets and that they've always mm-hmm. been with us. This is all just tied together. As far as the ancient order of that, kind of like an organized mm-hmm. structure involving, these prophets, those that, develop the skill or have it as a gift fully, that's something that I've created. Whether some sort of secret society exists fully as mm-hmm. a true that's been going on from century to century, I haven't met anybody from it, but it certainly right. seems like something like that could exist.
Yeah. Well, I certainly agree with you in terms of the ancient prophets. They all had similar, phenomena occurring to them that would indicate that they were seeing visions and then engaged in prophecy. And of course, prophecy is something that a lot of people don't understand. Prophecy is often given, and especially in the ancient prophets, it was given to help people change their ways so that it wouldn't come true. So it's kind of mm-hmm. like, it's not that it's written in stone. And mm-hmm. so that's important to understand in prophecy. But, all of my life I've had these visions where they block out reality. They're very quick. They're very meaningful for what's going on right then. Like I might have a vision of something I'm going to see in surgery that day that's very dangerous and I need to know about, like a hernia or something mm-hmm. that, if I don't know about it, something bad could happen. And then as I mentioned to you earlier, in my dorm room in college, I saw in the physical, I wasn't dreaming, I wasn't on drugs, my guardian angel. The room filled up with a golden light, and I turned around, and the angel was very tall, male, warrior class, with a sword and wings and just a lot of the things that you describe in your book. And I just froze. It was a little bit too much. And then the next four or five times I had a reading by a clairvoyant, the first thing they started out with was, "Your guardian angel wanted to talk to you, but you froze."
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah. Well, so then this book really must have hit a connection with you. I mean, you're practically telling a chapter out of it.
Right. Exactly. So it was very interesting. And I just want to say for the listeners that this is one of the most interesting books I've ever read. In terms of the storyline, which is a crime scene, I love crime, things, but yet it's very much filled with spiritual, aha moments, connecting everything within a storyline. It would make a great movie. I hope they do it someday.
Yeah, I am pursuing that on the side. Attempting to kind of make it. The movie business is it's an industry that you really kind of have to find the right connection. So,
There's so much more I have to say,
and there's so many more stories and so many, because the book is interdimensional. I mean, it's transdimensional.
It is.
The main character, the character that's introducing Dr. John Alderson, the story. I mean, he's a transdimensional seer. And, mm-hmm. I don't want to give too much away, but there's so much. I wanted to comment on on the one thing you said earlier about that a lot of people don't understand prophecies and the fact that they're given to warn people and to choose
right.
an alternate reality. And I agree with that completely. And, you know, in the Seer's Handbook section of the book, which to mm-hmm. those that haven't seen the book, you know, it's divided into three sections. The back is called the Seer's Handbook, written by one of the characters in the book, and
mm-hmm.
Dr. Lucius Jeremiah. And that's what defines a seer. A seer is someone that's there to guide humanity, to reveal the spiritual aspect of their existence and their dimension that is often ignored in the temporal. And absolutely, I believe that. I believe that there's alternate reality, alternate futures that one can be at a crossroads where they choose one or the other. And if they make the wrong choice, or a people or a group or a nation chooses the wrong path, well, then that
mm-hmm.
prophecy, which would entail a curse in the cases of the Old Testament where it was a warning,
mm-hmm.
would ensue, because they'd be breaking the laws of the universe, choosing a path of the opposite of the truth.
Right. So, you know, again, I think Nostradamus wrote a section on this, saying that, you know, the job of the prophet is to change the people so that the prophecy doesn't come true. You know, that's the whole thing. So when you read prophecy, you know, Revelations is kind of, you know, a little scary, you know, sometimes when you read that. So when you read prophecy, know that we probably have done some things to mitigate the really bad prophecies. I mean, I'm hoping we have, but you know, what time will tell. Nostradamus's prophecies about this time are certainly a lot more violent and scary than we see in the world right now. It's hard to know if we're through that era, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. You're asking the same questions I ask myself quite often, and certainly to have that hope.
That we've dodged a few bullets anyway.
Yeah.
That's true. So let's talk a little bit about what a seer is. It's, you know, and what this, we all know what ordinary reality is. That's what we share here in the third dimension. But a seer actually sees into another realm. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Well, sure. I mean, in the story, the platform I've created, the seers are individuals that are born with a clear second sight.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a gift and a curse for them, and that as they as I explain in the book, you know, as they start to hit ages 7 and 8 and things like that, their visions start to of the spiritual realm start to flood into their eyes a little bit at a time, and they start to see the world of they first start seeing the guardian angel, and that guardian angel then is in the book, you know, it's supposed to prepare them and protect them and guide them for what the future visions and things are going to start to have. And each seer, each seer has also their own gifts. In addition to seeing the spiritual dimension, they also have different gifts, like gift of, they all have the gift of prophecy to a certain extent. Some of them it's stronger than others. And others have, all different, and I call them charismas, or, you know, from the Greek, for gift. And, you know, some of them, like, for example, the main, the character that's introducing the story, you know, has a gift of, portal magnetism, where he's pulled from different dimensions to share his seer mm-hmm. abilities with not just one dimension of the physical reality, but others. So getting back to the path of the growth of the seers, a seer in this platform here, that as they get older, the spiritual world becomes so filled in their eyes that they then start seeing the souls of humanity, so that when they look at a person, it's not like they're not really seeing. They see the outer flesh of the person kind of like as if one was looking at an X-ray. It's mm-hmm. a kind of ghosted form. And what is very strong to their eyes is the soul, the internal, their spiritual part of that person is what they see predominantly. And in the story, what I have here is that, you know, I have this whole deal on soul diseases, and this is a very important thing, the message that I'm trying to get out in the book is that, you know, that and this is the job of the seers, which is that they see the intent of the soul. They see the damage that's been done to the soul through the choices that individuals have made. And from that, they're able to help guide individuals and humanity and so forth. So I think that's kind of like a nutshell to your question. There's
okay.
so much more I could say.
Okay, so there... And then we have the larger thing that's going on. We have the guardian angels that are protecting the individuals. And on that, I want to just mention that I covered, like, at one time, 6 emergency rooms at one time. So I'd see a lot of trauma. And sometimes, especially with spiritual people, they would tell me that they were in a car with a seatbelt on, and they had this car wreck where the top of the car was taken off, and they were found in a ditch with a few bruises. And the only thing they could remember is being elevated, and it was they were describing being elevated into another dimension at the time of impact. So, you know, I mean, this is very interesting. And, I mean, I had more than one of these stories. Like a guy on a motorcycle went through a truck. I mean, literally through it. I mean, there was no way for him to go under it. He went through it and was fine on the other side. His motorcycle was wrecked, but he was in a ditch and he was fine. So, this is some of the stuff that I began to realize that your guardian angels have some ability to elevate you interdimensionally so that you go through things and maybe get you out from seat belts and stuff like that. Of course, if you were elevated, you would just completely, your seat belt wouldn't hold you because your molecules would be further apart. So I was witnessing this sort of thing in the ER. I mean, the patients were telling me that they were kind of conscious throughout this thing that happened. So it can happen. In my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, yeah, I agree. In fact, I believe that happened to me when I was a child. And by the way, I call this, in the Seer's Handbook, I call this serenumosoma. Or serenumosomatology is the name I give it. Of course, from the Greek, you could break it down. And it is the study of how guardian angels protect humans with their spiritual forms and I have a section on that in the angelology chapter of the handbook.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a child, I was on top of this mountain, and it was right at my house. I lived in a very mountainous kind of Appalachian region of New York State where I grew up. And our house was situated right there, but, you know, oddly enough, with this cutout of this mountain, and there's this cliff literally in our front yard. And, you know, it was very tall. I mean, twice as tall as our four-story house, well, counting the basement, so it was 3 stories. So it was very tall. So as I was on the top, it was the winter, and there was a patch of ice up there, and I slipped. And my mother happened to be looking out the window, and she said she saw me fall from that cliff, and she said it looked like I was flying.
Mm-hmm.
And I landed at the bottom. I got up. I had no pain, nothing. I think maybe on my head, there was a little scratch or something. There was nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I walked away from it as if I had floated down.
That's great.
And we read about these stories, and you get to see them because you're a doctor. I mean, you get to see them firsthand when they come through it. And that's really amazing because when we read about these stories, the person that's in an airline crash or whatever, and they walk away or whatever. And the only thing that I just put this in the Sayers, that I would call this a theranumosoma, where that I create this concept in the book where I talk about that angels have the ability to transmute their spiritual form to somehow protect humanity from, physical matter. And in the story, of course, you remember the part about little Johnny trying to grab the Bible out of the fire.
Right.
And at first, the angels, he is using the powers of the Theranum Soma to protect Johnny's hand from the flames. But then, after which, that power is not used for reasons which remain to be seen. But that's fascinating that you get to hear those stories full account. It's one of those things that would be great if you haven't done it already to record them.
Yeah, I would like to do that. And I really think that that guardian angels work particularly hard to protect children. There are stories out there that a child, like a 3-year-old, will kind of run out into traffic, and people will witness a force forcing the child back, kind of almost throwing the child back onto the sidewalk with nothing there, And I think when we're small, our guardian angels have to work maybe twice as hard. And
that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. Well, kids do unexpected things quickly, and it is good to know that there's a guardian angel there to change things if it is in divine order that, the child not die right then,
Mm-hmm.
So,
absolutely. Yeah. And this, of course, recalls a part in the book where children, of course, I have 3 children of my own, and, obviously children are, when you have children, you learn a tremendous amount about yourself and about the reality. And in the story, there's a section there where a chapter that John, the main character, is brought to the maternity ward, where he gets to see babies and to see what their souls look like at birth. And then there's also a very frightening part where in the waiting room we get to see a battle of children's soul over through angels and demons. And it's, I think that observation that you made about perhaps, angels fighting harder for children, to me that makes intuitive sense.
Yeah. Well, we got some information in session, and this information actually came from Michael the Archangel. Very interesting. I want to tell you what he said and then what happened. It was back, I don't remember how long ago, but it was about a week before that person ended up eating the face off of the homeless person. Do you remember that in the news?
Yes, I do.
And they blamed it on bath salts, which is a drug, but it turned out the guy didn't have bath salts in his system, which is interesting. But anyway, the message we got in session was that there would be a lot more demonic possessions because of what was happening, the third and the fourth dimension kind of coming together. During the ascension, the third and the fourth dimensions kind of merge. And Michael said that there would be more demonic stuff happening. And there was a number of things that happened right after that. It wasn't just that guy, but there were a number of things in the news that would indicate fairly significant, unusually violent things that were different. So that was interesting. So, we've been following this to see if, see if this is happening. And I think it is. I think that there are a lot more people that are, experiencing these demonic encounters. And we were kind of investigating why. And certainly the soul diseases that you described would be a big reason. And the other things we were given as reasons were drug abuse, alcohol abuse, trauma, hormone changes like in puberty, after pregnancy, and even, I don't know whether you know this, but psychosis is so prominent after IVF that they require the women to see a psychiatrist before they do the IVF. And, of course, IVF involves large uses of hormones. Steroids, especially abusive steroids. I had one woman that was given a Medrol dose pack for poison ivy, and she tried to kill herself. And she wasn't depressed. She wasn't depressed at all. And, you know, I kind of figured out what was going on and intervened because it wasn't demonic, but it was kind of a karmic spirit type thing encouraging her to kill herself. And I kind of stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. But she said, I was the only person that understood her. All the psychiatrists thought she was depressed. She wasn't depressed at all. It was a steroid. So these are some of the things that can lead to the demonic energies entering one. And then, of course, suicide, homicide, sexual abuse, you know, abusing your animal, you know, all of these other things can then occur as evidence of the demonic shift. And I guess if you were a seer, you would see the red eyes. I think that's interesting, the red eyes. Yeah, exactly.
Well,
but the eyes are different.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
The eyes are very different. One of my friends had his wife become possessed, and he would call me and say, her eyes are different. Her eyes are very different. And he would know when she was. And then we would pray for her, and then she'd, you know, it'd leave, and then, you know, it would try to come back at another time. Very interesting stuff. And stuff I didn't even know. I mean, I didn't know this until I'm in the middle of experiencing it with other people. You know, it's. But I think you're onto something with this idea that there is, especially right now. I mean, maybe for the last year, there is a great deal of this going on. Maybe it's always gone on to some degree. But Michael would indicate that it's actually more prevalent right now.
Well, I believe that, too. First of all, I have a question for you, because you said in session. Briefly explain that to me when you said you're in session.
We have a group of seers that meet regularly, okay? In fact, we've met weekly or even more often than that since 1990. So you can imagine how long this, you know, this meditation group has been in session. So we say in session because we enter into a you know, meditative state, and then we receive information, and the information is very useful. You know, we heard the exact day the stock market was going to crash. I actually made money. I didn't lose money during.
I mean, this is meditation to me. I hinted in the handbook where I call it Trioptis meditation. I mean, that's our connection. That's where we get our information.
It is.
Is by slowing down our own mind, as our mind is not us.
Right.
Our mind is a tool we have, just like the body, and then we slow it down so we can get the information through the thoughts. But one thing I wanted to point out or talk to you about was that I think that's great. Mm-hmm. Everything you're saying, I'm getting so much confirmation on. You know, in the handbook, again, I define what I call, I believe, I got to look it up myself now. Psycho-spiritual pharmaceuticals. I don't know if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much in that in the handbook section, as you know.
It is. I love it.
Loaded. Obviously, it took me a long time to write that. But psycho-spiritual pharmaceuticals is something that I address in the book. And there's in one of the chapters that John is giving a bag. He has an IV in his arm, and an unknown fluid is dripping into his arm. And at that point, you're seeing things and being able to be influenced by a demonic force.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas previously, without that pharmaceutical substance entering his bloodstream, that power wouldn't have been there. You know, it's that mysterious link between the mind, body, and spirit. You know, one can influence the body to leverage something in the spiritual realm, either for good or bad. Or the same with the mind. And it's good to hear you mention that, and then from your perspective as a physician to be able to see these firsthand accounts of that. And I mean, I certainly believe that. And years back when I was in undergrad school and, you know, in art school, you know, I lived in New York City and I was around artists and I was around all different drug experimenters and, you know, had a lot of experience and a lot of friends, and I saw a lot of things happen with people that were took the paths of of these various forms of entertaining drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw all sorts of things which led me to believe that it's a doorway. You know, it's mm-hmm. and in the Greek and the Old Testament, I mean, the Septuagint translates witchcraft as a, you know, pharmakia, the use of drugs, and you know, to influence negatively the evil side of magic, so to speak. You know, where one can use mm-hmm. power connection of the spiritual demand for selfish, prideful, you know, rule with the evil energies that exist in the universe. And definitely, I believe there's a whole science to that the dark forces are able to use through people that choose to disease their soul. I believe that, you know, the soul diseases to me was very important to get across, because
mm-hmm.
I think in our culture today, we see a real deterioration of truth. And, you know, when we start embracing lies, and then we start stepping away from what I call in the seers, I call virtue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we choose the path of vice. And
right.
these things cripple us. And they
mm-hmm.
and they destroy our souls. And from that, when we choose these thought patterns, it alters our soul. We start attracting forces, spiritual forces that are around us that are similar in vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So thus, if we're starting to choose a path of greed, there are plenty of other spiritual and perhaps thought dimension beings that exist that will be drawn to us and to help us channel that greed. Kind of like, you know, there's that law of attraction that's talked a lot about. You know, it's certainly mm-hmm. that law exists. I mean, there's many laws, and that's just one of them. So that can be used mm-hmm. for evil or for good. We can draw the demonic forces to us through our actions and choices and our thoughts. Or we can draw angels and, and choose a path towards God.
Yeah, and that's why, for me, the group setting with people that I trust and know have virtue is a great way for a spiritual discipline, because, you know, it's set up, you're going to do it, you're not going to get distracted, it can build on itself, and it's an educational forum whereby we can get information from higher levels that is extremely useful, not just a little useful, extremely useful and extremely protective. One of the stories to emphasize this is in session, Michael told one of my friends that I needed ivermectin. Of course, he wasn't a doctor. He's a physicist, not a doctor. So he just was going, ivermectin, what is that? You know, and I said, well, I know what ivermectin is because I have patients with parasites and I use it on them. So I just started taking ivermectin as, you know, because I was told to in session. And then I broke out with these big things that look like bug bites, but big bug bites. And at the time, monsters inside me was trying to do a filming of what we were doing here, because we were finding mold inside breast implants. Monsters Inside Me plays on Animal Planet and also played on Discovery UK. So they kept bugging me to TiVo the show or to watch the show. And so I TiVo'd one episode. And I was watching it, and on it was gnathostomiasis, which is a form of parasite that can be very deadly. And I looked at the patient who had it, and she had these big bug bites on that looked just like what I had. And sure enough, there was a little parasite coming out in the middle of these bug bites. The ivermectin was driving them out. And gnathostomiasis can cause cancer. I mean, it's involved, you know, with lowering the energy in an organ that you can get cancer. I had no other symptoms that I had it, and I'd had lox and bagels. I really don't eat sushi, but I had lox and bagels at a particular restaurant, and I'm sure I got it there. And so I told the restaurant in a nice way that they needed to check. You know, I treated myself. It took 9 months of antiparasitics to get rid of this, and I think I probably dodged the bullet of cancer, because they had settled in my lung. I knew exactly where they went. And, you know, the ivermectin got them to go out of my body. So, I mean, I think I can credit Michael the Archangel for saving my life on that one.
That's amazing.
Isn't that an amazing
story? I mean, it's
story?
Amazing. That's just great stuff. Gives me chills.
Well, you know, that's available to people who want to develop their spiritual life through meditation. That kind of protection.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. It is my core discipline in my life, is my morning meditation. And you know, one of the things when I talk to people and I say things like, well, you know, you do the Lord's Prayer meditation. They go, what, Lord's Prayer? And they immediately start thinking some pejorative religious experience they've had. And then it blocks them from the truth mm-hmm. that I'm trying to tell them. And it's
right.
why I created that term celestial. You know, the combination of science and celestial, the two
mm-hmm.
words. And, you know, trying to say, look, it's all the same thing. You know, there's the invisible physical laws of the universe, which science has been trying to, you know, discover. And then there's the invisible
mm-hmm.
laws of the universe dealing with, you know, other entities and energies and things that come from infinite intelligence, you know, God. I mean, it's all the same stuff. You know, when I read the Lord's Prayer, you know, it's the formula. It's the formula. And
mm-hmm.
I usually start my day with a meditation cycle that embraces the truth that is within the first part of the Lord's Prayer, especially is, if you read it, it's a meditation.
It
you know,
is.
You're not asking
it's...
for anything. It's just meditating.
And it's a very, very powerful protective prayer because it's used so much. The more that something is used, the more power it gets. That's a principle. You know,
absolutely
right,
it is. It is. It's a principle. Everyone knows that. If you're going to learn to play the piano, if you just do it once a week or once a month, you're not going to get too far.
Right.
But if you do it every day and you're disciplined, next thing you know, you're going to be able to do some amazing things with that piano.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell the listeners that one of the things that I realized that I think you'll agree with, Michael, is that the biggest trick done in modern times that, you know, you want to say Satan, Lucifer, whoever you call the head of the dark forces, has done is to make us believe that this dark realm does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that thought form... Mm-hmm. did more damage than anything else. Because if you're not aware of something, you're totally exposed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that the majority of people know in their hearts that there is a good versus evil scenario being played out, not just in the third dimension, but also in higher dimensions. But they don't really... I mean, they a lot of them choose to believe that it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you mentioned, you know, about how the visions you've had and the different information that you've had, like info dumping from the spiritual realm that's been given to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of us that do practice this state of spiritual discipline, which begins with slowing the mind and, you know, controlling one's breathing and entering
mm-hmm.
into a state of meditation and aligning your spiritual self to be submission to the, you know, the creator. We get these, you know, info dumped. And you know, there was this one nice picture that I got one day when I was tempted with you know, a great sin, if you want to use the word sin or vice or whatever term we, you know, that grabs people in a way that doesn't create a defense mechanism. And I got to see this picture that if I were to have done this, if I were to have chosen this, made this decision, which
mm-hmm.
I could have rationalized very well to anybody,
mm-hmm.
and I could have, you know, carried on my life, you know, altered things to have made, you know, in my life to do this path, I would have stepped into such a dark forest. It's such a dark valley, a descending valley, that I would have to choose that world does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's that classic thing, those that are in darkness hate to see light, you know, because their foolish deeds are exposed. You know, and so this vision that I had in my mind was a mountain, and that went down into a forest, and the forest receded downward into this mountain into in complete darkness, into eventually going underground into molten lava, magma.
Right.
Okay. And it was the perfect picture for me. You know, at the top of the mountain, it's very hard to climb it. And it's the higher you climb, the brighter it is, and the more you see, and the more you're exposed to truth, and the less you can get away with stuff. But it's a hard path. You really have to climb. It's daily discipline to get to that peak. But the more you see, and that's analogous to the more we see, the more spiritual information from God, the Creator, infinite intelligence, infinite brilliance, whatever name one wants to give it. We see, but if we start to loosen that and slip down, there's a line where we start bumping into these little trees and things that kind of block out some of that brightness, that spiritual truth that can seep into us, that's meant to seep into our soul. And we start walking into these paths into the forest. We still look back and see the truth shining through. We could see the path illuminated, saying, no, don't go down there. Mm-hmm. But there's a point. As we go down that path, one becomes lost. And that's when I believe that what you're saying there, in their heart, they know that evil exists. But they're in the dark
they
path.
Do.
And they're going down this place where it feels really nice and warm and comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
That picture of the magma underneath the earth. And that's suddenly start being perceived as light. That's what's being perceived as good. And the reverse morality kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the path where a demonic takeover happens.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, again, I want to emphasize that if you have a loved one or one you're close to, or if you practice spiritual disciplines, you can get this information as well. I certainly have in ERs and other critical areas. The eyes are different. The person is no longer in there after the switch. And the demon can leave, and the demon represents an energy not of the third dimension. You know, it's an energy from another dimension that then takes over the person, and the person can, you know, commit a sexual act that, you know, is breaking the law, can kill somebody, can kill themselves. Oftentimes, you know, I believe a lot of suicides are mitigated by these energies. Because when the person comes out of it, like the woman in the emergency room, she'd slit her wrist, so I was sewing up her tendons. They don't know why they did it. You know, they go, I didn't want to kill myself. You know, I never really had that thought before. And then all of a sudden I had an overwhelming desire to kill myself. And I'm not talking every suicide is like this.
Sure.
I mean, a lot of suicides are just, you know, a lot of teenage suicides are trying to get attention to themselves. And then a lot of people who are severely depressed really do want to end their lives. And or critically ill with, you know, terminal illnesses, they want to go out easier than what they see ahead of them. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the people that really never wanted to kill themselves, and then all of a sudden have an overwhelming desire.
Mm-hmm.
That's demonic. That, in my experience,
yeah,
that's demonic, because
mm-hmm.
this person was not at all prone to demonic, you know, anything. I mean, she was quite spiritual. She meditated at least weekly, she said. So this person was someone who was not prone to it, and yet one Medrol dose pack allowed it to come in.
Mm-hmm.
So I just told her not to take any more Medrol dose packs. You know, that was my advice.
Sure.
Probably
well,
pretty,
you're the
pretty good advice.
You
yeah.
You should guide people. That's right. That was,
yeah,
that was
really
good for you to be there for her. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And she agreed. She said she thought it was a Medrol dose pack. You know, and she didn't want to take the, you know, the drugs that the psychiatrist wanted her to take. She said she didn't need them. So, and I actually talked to this entity that was trying to get her to kill himself. I mean, I'm able to do that. So I talked to him, and he was lonely. He wanted her to join him. I mean, that's what it was. This wasn't so much demonic.
Really?
It was just, they had been together. Yeah, he was in another dimension, and he wanted her to come with him. So I told him he had no right to do that, though. Because nobody has a right to try to get somebody else to kill themselves. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's spiritual law, you know?
No question. Well, our life is a gift, and it's meant to be of service. You know, we're here. To me, one of the foundational principles in my meditation, and I believe it's pretty much the first line in the Lord's Prayer, is that, you know, our Father, you know, we're recognized that we're created. Truth is your name. Your holiness is another word is truth. In our modern understanding, we can understand that better. Holiness has, you know, it has a lot of, different connotations in people's lives. You know, the truth is separate. It's outside of things. You know, and when we forget that we're created and that we have responsibility here, you know, we're supposed to be using the gifts that we have, the assets, our physical body, our breath is our first asset. Those two things, mm-hmm. we're born with breath in that physical body, and it's our first thing. We have to manage them responsibly. We shouldn't be eating things that are going to hurt it or do things that are going to hurt ourselves and so on and so forth. And then, of course, our mind and the talents, such as you as a physician and all of the skills that you have and the different artistry skills or whatever, the different things I have, which often I'm tired and don't want to use, but I know it's my responsibility to do so. And I think when we start forgetting that, either putting ourselves in that place of creation, being self-believing the lie of being self-created, as which is what, you know, the original sin of, you know, the Satan, the ultimate Satan aspect of things is that. It's that the denying of being a created form and that the gifts given are you meant to be done in service. That once we start throwing that, believing that lie, then that's it. That's the path. That's the path where all sorts of these other things start happening. You know, there's one thing I wanted to point out also in the book, which reminds me of a lot of things we're discussing about now. And, you know, I talked briefly about the psycho-spiritual pharmaceuticals in the story. There's a little ditty in there in one of the chapters about these kids smoking pot and all that. That's all part of that, you know, opening that doorway. But I also have, there's a brief moment in the story where there's these moths that that are flying around in the spiritual dimension, and they land on people's souls. And as they land on the soul, in a diseased aspect of the soul, they turn into a leech. Mm-hmm. And I just mentioned it real briefly because the book is packed with a lot of stuff, you know, It's kind of hard to keep the narrative going quickly and introduce a lot of these concepts. But then again, I go into it later, into the handbook, for those that are interested into kind of reading more about it. And I describe that these are tools that the demonic forces use to attack diseased souls. You know, all of us have our souls, you know, need work to some level. So that, you know, the analogy being that soul is damaged somewhere, that the demonic forces have, you know, tools, instruments of some sort where they can kind of attack that part of you and then perhaps inject that leech, you know, that parasite that goes in you to then start penetrating your armor to then getting to your soul to then suck your life energy of some analogous way, you know, or whatever, as I put in there.
Right.
And what those things you're talking about with parasites and possession, all those things reminded me of those different metaphors that I use in the story to kind of talk about those truths.
Well, you know, I believe that's true. We learn a lot about psychic self-defense. It's not coming so much from the demonic world, but it's coming from other people who prefer to live off your energy rather than get their own energy from higher dimensions. And they're actually quite good at it. Several times I found myself just exhausted after a patient encounter, just exhausted. I could hardly, you know, do anything. So I would call my friends who could tell me what was going on, and they would see this cord of energy, you know, in this other dimension. It wasn't in this dimension, obviously, but my solar plexus was being, there was a cord attached to my solar plexus that was pulling energy out at a rapid rate. And, of course, I'm a surgeon. You know, I have to operate, you know, sometimes for 10, 12 hours. You know, I can't be low energy. So so they would cut that and then help restore, you know, restore my energy. I could, you know, restore it kind of quickly once that quit. But I wasn't always aware that this was happening. You know, it's a lot of this occurs outside your awareness. You just find yourself exhausted.
Yes, I agree.
So, you know, we were given instruction on some psychic self-defense mechanisms that might help prevent these attachments. And there's whole books written on this. You know, there's a whole section of information. But it doesn't surprise me that there might be something, you know, similar to what you talk about, especially if you already have a defect within you that it can, you know, it can attach to. You know, I think there could very well be something like that.
Well, definitely. I mean, it sounds like when you mentioned solar plexus, I mean, definitely sounds like you've studied a lot of, you know, energy medicine, that kind of stuff. And, you know, I definitely list that, I refer to it in the handbook regarding the chakra points, the energy points, with, you know, that, you know, the, what I call, you know, what, life energy, orgone, ode, odic force, you know, chi, prana, all those the different forms. It's, you know, one of the energies that, you know, the creator had created and exists in the universe that's nonotropic and we don't really understand yet. But definitely, you know, through those energy points in our physical body that exists in other planes of reality that we don't really see. I mean, there's all kinds of that stuff that's going on. And there are practitioners that are out there that are using it for either good or evil. So in your case, to suck you and take that energy for themselves or to, for people that perhaps can, you know, use that for good to shield themselves and still channel their energy in ways of such as that I read about people that can perform, you know, miracles, you know, even acts of blessing that we, that the concept we seem to have lost in our modern culture that's still throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, this whole concept of blessing, which I've read some documents, you know, people in our modern age that spiritually connected that have, you know, kind of revived that aspect of blessing, that we're using our own life energy within us to then to bless food and to bless trees and things like that, like the way Christ cursed a fig tree. I mean, one can bless something. And, you know, the blessings of Abraham in the Old Testament was so important to have the patriarchal blessing. That these things had true power, you know.
And
from my studies, it seems that this blessing is tied into that invisible life energy that exists, that somehow it moves through the boundaries of reality into the other dimension, pulling different laws through our dimension where we have our different physical laws, you know, that such as entropy, you know, it can break those laws. Anyway,
right.
That's a whole
other basically topic. Right. It's spiritual energy is basically something that through spiritual practices we learn to tap into. And if we tap into it fairly continuously, we elevate ourselves through, you know, disciple, initiate, and then on to master, you know, mastership of the physical plane. And then if you're able to keep that connection all the time, you won't have depression, anxiety, you know, any of the negative emotions cannot take hold of you because that energy keeps you restored. It also, if you look at Buddhist monks and people who are very much into spiritual practices, they don't seem to age very much. You know, they can be 80 without any wrinkles on their face. You know, so obviously that life force energy is used to help restore your, you know, cellular health and keep you from premature aging. So, or even aging in general, if you're really spiritual, you know, and practice these disciplines the majority of the day. You know, you see the evidence of that in the when you look at the practitioners of it. So, yeah, it is energy.
Absolutely.
It absolutely is. And people who do this, like you say, like you do and I do every day, I think that is that's one of the most protective things we can do. It certainly is protective for our health, our finances, our relationships, you know, all the manner of things that can go wrong in your life and cause you grief. you can get protection from. I mean, protection is available if you connect to this the spiritual realm and pay attention to what information you're given. You know, so it's out there.
Absolutely.
You just have to, or inside you, rather. It's really more inside you. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour, Michael. Would you like to give your contact information and give the name of the book again and kind of the description? Because I thought it was a great book. I love the story.
Great. Yeah, well, the book is called The Seers, subtitle New World Order. And you can get more information on it by going to theseers.com. That is spelled P-H-E-S-E-E-R-S, theseers.com. From there, you can kind of get a glimpse of it, and it's available everywhere, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, any bookseller. And that's pretty much it.
Well, great. Well, I certainly hope you get it made into a movie. I think you're going to be successful, but I think the timing is important. I think the timing is very important for this book. It's like it's going to wake a lot of people up to things that they kind of put in the background and quit thinking about. And I think that that's why it has to come out as at least a video, if not a movie. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that the truths that are in it are going to be may not appeal to a mainstream audience. Hard to say.
Well, maybe we're going to be there not too long where people realize that this is something they need to pay attention to. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. It was a great conversation, and I really recommend people get the book and read it. I think you'll really enjoy the story as well as understand more about the spiritual world.
Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
All right. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we are interviewing Mark Abadi on Evolve, and then the week after that, Lisbeth Holtman on The Power of the Voice. The Noetic Science meeting for this coming month will be my astrologer, Del Dorenbach, who is going to give a lecture on the third Thursday on astrology. I don't have the exact topic, but her talks are really very interesting. That's at 7:30 at the Dunwoody Center. Again, thank you for joining us. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health. Join us next week.